All right, welcome to episode 8 of the SEO for Photographers podcast with Dylan and Corey from Fuel Your Photos. Today, we are going to talk about the three most popular questions we get about SEO. And those are the differences between pages and posts, exact match domains, and site links.
Yeah, we see these questions literally every week, probably each of them every week in most weeks.
Yeah, totally. It's bad enough that we have answers pasted so we can like copy and paste, and we've made videos before in the past on some of these. But yeah, just excited to talk these over a little bit.
Yeah, sounds good. So you want to jump right in?
Let's do it.
All right, I'll ask you the first question and you start answering and then we'll just riff from there. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right, Dylan, if I am going to create a new piece of cornerstone content, I'm doing some content marketing. Let's say I'm targeting a venue or a city or whatever. Should I make that a page or a post?
Totally. So first off, it's going to be slightly different based on whatever platform you're using. They each treat them differently, more or less. But the main answer is it doesn't matter, typically. Personally, in that exact situation, I'd probably prefer a page, only because that keeps it out of my blog archives. It keeps away from having tag and categorization and all of that stuff to worry about. There's no author archives. There's typically you have comments turned off. If you're on a platform like Squarespace, it keeps blog out of the URL. There's lots of reasons like that I prefer pages for large cornerstone pieces of content that you typically only have a few of on your site.
Yeah, I think you touched on a lot of things. We can kind of dig into some of these here.
Yeah.
So let's first of all talk a little bit about platform specific settings or functionality for pages versus posts. So let's start with like a let's say there's an example that has something where you have pages that are different from your blog posts, which are on WordPress. So a good example of this would be Show It or Good Gallery, or there's several others that have existed in the past that you could have a separate WordPress installation for your blog. But the pages are technically designed in a separate platform. So in that situation, what does that mean or what does that do?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have constraints about like if you're on Show It and you're using a plugin or just settings that are controlling things like the head of your page, which could be something like as easy as tracking or maybe it's image compression that's automatic or something like that. Those are only going to apply to the portion of your site that's handled by WordPress, whereas the pages that are created by that platform are going to be on their own. So you might have differences in issues like that.
Yeah, I mean that's the main thing, is that the way that you handle the SEO for the SEO settings, things like title, meta description, indexation, OG tags, all of these things are going to be different. The inputs are going to be different. They may not have some of those things. If you're using, like Dylan said, if you're using any plugin that controls the way that the page is handled or post is handled, in this case, let's just say, for example, Show It. I'll just give a couple of things about Show It pages versus posts. So with Show It, your pages and posts will have a different sitemap. So the Show It sitemap is under siteinfo.xml versus the WordPress sitemap is whatever. If you're using Yoast, it's, you know, sitemap.xml or sitemap_index.xml. And so there's going to be a difference in what you need to submit to have Google automatically crawl those if you want to do it that way. Like we've already said, all of the plugins that you use on WordPress won't necessarily apply to your Show It pages. There may be some settings you can change on WordPress that could apply to some Show It pages, especially your home page. So it kind of depends on what plugin you're using. But these are the kinds of things that could get confusing with a platform like Show It, where your pages and posts are handled separately. Now, having said that, you can make pretty much anything you want on Show It on the WordPress side. You can make it a WordPress template, still use the Show It builder, and have all of the functionality of WordPress. Well, I say that for the most part, all the functionality of WordPress for your Show It site all across the board. But most people don't do that. So that's the kind of thing where it depends on your platform. Same thing with Squarespace. Dylan, you can talk about the Squarespace specific things.
Yeah, just a few ideas on Squarespace. It's either hard slash impossible to no index individual blog posts on Squarespace. So if you have a large history of blogging on Squarespace and a lot of those posts are underperforming, or you've changed markets, or you want to keep the content live on your site, but it's something that you don't necessarily want to show to search engines, it's really hard to do that content audit on Squarespace. It is easy in their SEO settings to change those for individual pages. Outside of that, the differences between pages and posts on Squarespace, they grab the title. The title's created in two different spots, and so you have to make sure that matches up.
Yeah, you got the slug.
Exactly. The URL slug always has the
collection.
Blog collection. Name. Yeah, added. Added. And that can be somewhat annoying, especially if you're doing like complex setups where you have multiple collections and then you have all these different slugs, and it can be confusing for the user.
You know, all of this is making me realize that, especially for myself, it really comes down to a personal preference for the way that I have my site built and organized.
For sure. Completely.
Like, any of these things could work for search engines. Whenever Google crawls the page, if the HTML output is the same, it doesn't care whether it's a page or a post.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some considerations for crawlability, especially for really large sites. Whenever you have thousands of posts or something, you might have better natural internal linking with the posts than you would with pages, especially on WordPress. But I mean, outside of that, which is really not even a main consideration for photographers, it's kind of like, how do you want to organize this? I was just thinking the other day, I was digging through the Fuel Your Photos site, and I was like, oh man, we have got like 60 pages right now. This is making me feel claustrophobic or something. I never like my pages to get up that high.
Totally.
But like, if I had 500 posts, it wouldn't bother me for some reason.
For sure.
I don't know. I think it's just kind of the way that I've always looked at it, is like, posts are something that I have in bulk. There's going to be a lot of them. And with pages, there's only a few. It's not really necessarily the case, but
no, totally.
That's how I think about it.
Yeah, and you're right. I wanted to reiterate that point that you made about Google not caring. I think they've actually officially, like, somebody asked on Twitter, like, hey, is there a difference between pages and posts? And they referred, or they just said, like, we don't even know what you're talking about. Like, we do not care at all. Because you're right, they're just looking at the actual code, and there is no difference. There's no like meta tag that says this is a page.
Exactly. Well, I mean, technically there could be in WordPress, but I mean, or any platform, but most of the time that's really not the case. And even if it were, it wouldn't matter. Let's dig into a couple of the specific things that are unique to pages and posts by default. Now, it's important to say by default here, especially, let's kind of lean towards talking about WordPress here, even though some of these things will also apply on Squarespace. By default in WordPress, things are a specific way, but with WordPress, if you are a developer or if you add a plugin, you can modify pretty much any of these things. You can make any post type look like any other post type if you want. But by default, these things that we're going to talk about here are the way that it's set up in WordPress. So the first one would be taxonomies. What are taxonomies?
Yeah, so that's just organization of your content. And so the typical taxonomies are tags. So we all know tags and categories. So you typically pick a category, I think you're forced, or it will be called uncategorized. And then you can optionally add tags to your content. And they're just ways to organize your content for users.
Yeah, and they'll automatically create archives for each one that you use. And those archives, again, it's a way that theoretically Google could crawl the archive to find all of the content that's in that category or tag. Again, though, it's really not a main consideration unless you have tens of thousands of posts, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the next would be date and author archives. And so you might have seen when you're checking your indexation that you have an archive that says everything that was posted in January of 2016. This might be useful for a large publication that does 4 posts a day. It's not useful for photographers.
Right.
And the same goes for author archives. Most of the photographer sites we work on are 1 or 2 people, and they don't need individual author archives in almost every case.
Yeah, exactly. It's just creating more things that can be crawled, and it's probably just messing up the index. We really no index those on almost every case. However, the one thing to note about the dates is that, again, by default, if you set up WordPress, it's going to include the date in the permalink.
That's true.
So you could, that's another thing about posts, that if you don't change it, they will look different than pages just because of the permalink having the date. Now, that's one of the first things I change on WordPress every time I set it up, set the blog post's permalink to post name, so it looks just like a page at that point.
Same. Awesome. Next, we have comments. And once again, by default, are comments turned on pages as well?
No, just posts.
Okay, that's what I thought. So yeah, comments, they can be on any type of page on WordPress, but typically it's just turned on posts, and it's just a way to have people interact with your content. WordPress's thinking is that on a main page, like an about, you don't need a conversation, but blog posts are more timely and have a discussion typically.
Same thing is true on Squarespace, isn't it? By default, you have comments on posts, but not pages.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. We already talked a little bit about permalinks. We talked about on Squarespace having the collection name in the slug and that the dates are by default in WordPress. Yeah. We haven't talked about parent-child nesting yet.
Yeah, let's get to that. What is a parent-child nesting situation?
So with WordPress, by default, a post cannot have a child, but a page can. And so what that means is if I wanted to have mydomain.com/venues/name of venue as like an organizational structure, I could do that with pages, but I cannot by default do that with posts. So you can basically nest your content so that it falls underneath a slug or a different page, basically.
Yeah, and we see this a little bit on some photography sites. It's pretty rare, but it can be useful. If you have like multiple specialties, you might create a parent page for your family specialty, and then you have a child page that's family pricing or family galleries or something like that.
Yeah, I actually just did this with my test site, blazephoto.com. Oh, cool. I'm using that, what I just mentioned. I do Columbia Wedding Venues is a page, and then every venue kind of falls as a child of that.
That's
so
awesome.
It's not necessary, but it is a preference that I'm testing there just to see, does it work okay? It should be fine.
And it does a few things. I think it shows users when they're on that child page that it kind of reminds them that you have this larger page of Columbia Wedding Venues. And I believe it also tells Google some of that information.
And not to mention, you could enable breadcrumbs on these pages, which lets people click back to that parent page easily from kind of a sub-navigation.
Exactly. All right, after that, we have organizational preference.
Yeah, we kind of already mentioned
talked
that.
About that a lot. Yeah.
That's like our, you know, just what do we want to use for this? How do we want our site to be set up as far as like when we log into the back end? Do we want to have 100 pages or do we want to have it all under posts? There are even plugins to change the interface of WordPress so that your pages can show the nesting structure so that it's more organized. I think there's a plugin called Nested Pages or something like that I used to use a lot. I don't use it anymore just because it's like an extra plugin, but those kinds of things, like when I was creating a course inside of WordPress, it was really helpful to have like a post type that enabled nesting for lessons and things like that. So all of this really comes back to what is your intention. And some people, by the way, may have a really good plan for a way that they're going to use categories or tags to organize their content on their site, where you can click through those to get to the archives. They may be making custom archive landing pages, or even if they're not, they may know that they're going to use a tag cloud on every post and it's going to help people navigate to similar posts. And so all of this, like if you want to use taxonomies to help people find more similar content, then a post is probably going to be better for you.
Yep. Well, cool. Do you think that's enough on this topic?
I think so. Hopefully that helps people understand that it's really more about the platform and your preferences. And to Google, it really doesn't matter. If it's content, if it can be rendered, if it can be crawled, if it can be understood, it's fine. I will say again, there are cases we have seen, especially with Showit, where the pages just, they can look really bad because of the drag and drop functionality, but that could be true of a post too. It's just that by default, a lot of times people will use posts differently. And so that's kind of the thing. Like a lot of the decision here is going to be, what is the default of your system? What does it force you to do? Or what does it make you more likely to do? Those things could have some impact on Google being able to crawl and render your page. But outside of that, if that's not true, Google doesn't care.
Exactly. Perfect. I like that. The final answer, Google doesn't care.
Yeah.
All right, so let's dive into exact match domains. Do you want to kind of tell us what an exact match domain is and our typical question that we get about those?
Yeah, so the main question is, hey, I just got an email from some guy saying he wants to sell me my city specialty photography.com for $250. Usually it's between $100 and $250.
Yeah, I've seen
And they're like,
thousands.
yeah, that
It's on sale
does
for seven
happen.
thousand now.
But most of the time when people have asked me about it, it's a few hundred. It's pretty cheap. It's low enough that they know someone might consider buying it. And so they're asking, is there any SEO benefit to this? Should I buy it? It's not that much. I don't mind buying it, but am I just throwing money out the door?
Yeah. And then I see every time there's a few people that answer, like, oh, no, it's probably not worth it. And then somebody will say, yeah, well, I bought a few of those. And then I just redirected them to my site. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit.
Sounds good. Yeah, so I guess here's the first question that's just a really easy one for you to just wipe out, sweep under the rug. Does it make any difference to take an exact match domain and just redirect it to your site?
Typically, no. I'll say that almost always no. I whenever I see somebody asking this question, my first thing I do is I look up the domain's history and I look to see if it has been used in the past. And once or twice I've seen past usage where they hit it with like thousands of toxic, crazy spam links. And so in that case, not only will it not help you, it could really hurt you.
Yeah, so tell me what tools you're using to check that
Yeah, so first
domain history.
I check like the who is information, which is going to tell you who's registered this, and typically it's private, but it'll tell you like registration dates. And then I also look at the Wayback Machine to see when there was actually a live site and what it was. And I'm looking for stuff like is there like Viagra or whatever, like was it spammed? Was it an actual photographer's site? Or was it just a typically, it's just a landing page for domain registers or trying to sell it. And then I use an SEO tool like Ahrefs or Semrush, and I look up its backlink history. And that's going to tell you if anybody's actually tried to point links at this in the past.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll actually have the opposite be true. You could have that, someone just picked this up, a domainer bought an expired domain for, $20 or something, and it was a photographer's site and it had great links. And that could be, in that case, it's like the only case
The one
where
time.
you would ever want to just redirect it, and maybe you would still pick up some benefit, especially if it's recent. Like
Yeah.
if it just expired a month ago and before that it was live. It had like natural link profile pointing to it. But I mean, the chances of that with
Oh,
an EMD are just like
it's
very
so
small.
rare. And even if I did that, I first would test it by putting the old content back on the site, restoring it from Wayback Machine probably, and seeing if it ranks. And if it ranks well in a month or so, then I would probably just redirect it to my site.
Or redirect sections of it to your site.
Exactly. Or leave it up and have it like just be a lead generator.
Yeah, and people are gonna be like, rebuild it from way back. Pro tip here, there's actually services that will do that for you.
Like $50. So yeah, let's jump into this a little bit more. Why do you think exact match domains are even remotely a technique to talk about?
Yeah, I think the thing is, in history, this has been a thing that worked, and even to arguably, for some other search engines, it may still be a thing that works. Even
Well, it
arguably on Google, it could still be
yeah,
a thing that works.
I
And there's a
know.
way, like a specific reason why it would work. But beside that, we'll get to that in a second. Like even right now, if you just look at Bing as an example, I'm at least last time I checked, which has admittedly been almost a year probably since I looked at this. But and that's like, tens of years in SEO world potentially. But like I was still seeing exact match domains outrank stuff all the time, like so many more exact match domains showing up in the first page on Bing than I was on Google. So I think they were probably weighing that a little bit heavier. And in the past, I mean, I think Google has taken that as like, oh, well, if it says these keywords in the domain, it must be a strong signal that it's about that. Until everyone started spamming the heck out of it. I mean, that's been a long time,
For
15 or
sure.
20 years, probably.
Yeah, I feel like the history of Google's treatment of exact match domains was that they worked really, really well in like the early 2000s. and then they kind of got wiped out. And just in the last like 3 or 4 years or so, I'm seeing a strong resurgence of them working quite well. They're quite effective.
So how would you, let's say that you bought an exact match, or we've seen cases where an exact match is ranking very well. Why is that?
I'd say that there's probably two factors. First is that if you have an exact match domain, Google is unable to really tell the difference between people making that query and a branded query. So they think that everybody typing in Portland wedding photographers is possibly talking about my brand. Or anytime that is mentioned online, it might be talking about my brand. Likewise, when people link to your site using the exact match of your keyword as the anchor text, which is the text that they click on for the link, typically Google is going to penalize any company that's trying to use their main keyword as anchor text, but they're not.
Yeah, when it becomes like the primary way that you link is with an exact match keyword, they're going to see that as unnatural.
For sure. But they don't penalize people for branded anchor text. So if it's the name of your company, you can't be penalized for saying the name of your company and linking to it. Yeah. So it's kind of a cheat where you're making the name of your company also the target of your main query. So I think that that's probably it. Like, their inability to judge branded queries and mentions, and also the anchor text optimization.
Yeah, so you said it there, but you didn't say it in the beginning when you started talking about that. This is only the case if your business name actually matches that exact match domain.
For sure.
So like, that's the key. If you want to name your business Portland Wedding Photographers, and you can get that portlandweddingphotographers.com, then I would say it probably will actually still benefit you in Google. That being said, there's a downside to that, you know, because if that is your brand and people search for it and Google does not determine that you are what they're looking for, then they may not show your business in the knowledge graph panel. You may not show up in other SERP features that would have showed up in if your brand was unique.
Exactly. And I'm going to show a quick example of one that we have come across while doing keyword research for a competitor. This is in the town of Dayton, Ohio. And there's a site, which is a real site, real company, and their company name is Dayton Wedding Photographers. And their domain name is DaytonWeddingPhotographers.com. And they're ranking in the number one position.
And it's so strong that their entire site is actually set to be no indexed.
Yeah.
Accidentally, it's definitely not on purpose.
For sure.
From what I can tell.
Yeah.
But Google is still ranking it in the number one position and saying, no information is available for this page.
Yeah, I should reach out, and I think I found him on Instagram. I should send him a message and just say, hey, man, you should fix this.
No, let's not.
Yeah.
Because we have other people we'd rather rank.
Yeah. But I was researching into their domain a little bit when I saw it, because it is just so odd. And they've just done a really good link building campaign of getting their work featured on other sites, and then it links back to DaytonWeddingPhotographers.com with the anchor text Dayton Wedding Photographers. And from what I can tell, it's all natural. Like, they are actually providing the photos, they're an actual company, and it's ranking number one. So
it's so weird because the website is also terrible. If you go to it, it's like, I wonder if they'll ever listen to this, but I mean, if you do, you gotta fix this website. At least last time I looked at it, it still had some like template text in it, and it looks like it might have been updated, but
for sure. The first time we saw it, we thought it was a spam site
because London, it says like UK.
ABC Road, London, UK. And I was just like, this can't be real. And it says copyright 2017. And these photos kind of looked like stock photos, but I think it is actually a real company. So I'm not going to tear into it too hard.
Anyway, so the whole point is that's one strategy. If you want to name your business that, you could potentially go that route. Yep. But there's another strategy that you could use if you want to buy one of these exact match domains. And in fact, before we get into that, I'll just mention really quick kind of another reason that you may consider buying it. In fact, I'm going to give two tips here.
Cool.
First one, because I've had a little bit of experience with selling domains, I will tell you that anyone who wants to sell you a domain will always be willing to negotiate. Okay, so the first thing you do if you decide that you're interested in buying, it's offer them, you want to start at between 25 and 50% of whatever they offered you. So if they said they'll sell it to you for $200, say I'm interested at $50. Start there. And they may not respond at all. And if you really want it, respond again and say, okay, would you do $100? But most of the time, people are going to hit you with a number that's about double what they expect to get. And then you may need to negotiate a couple of times back and forth, but you'll almost always be able to get it for lower than what they initially offer. And then the second thing is, there are reasons to buy it just to keep other people from doing what we were just mentioning, right? Or the next thing that we're going to talk about. You don't want your competitors to name their business Dayton Wedding Photographer and be able to kind of get that hack. So buying it could theoretically keep it out of another person's, they won't be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And then the third like kind of small benefit would be you could do like social campaigns or something like that, where you just want to give somebody something really easy. Let's say your name is like, you know, really hard for people to spell, and that's the name of your business. Maybe you buy a domain like that, and then for your Facebook ads or something like that, you just have it, you know, portlandweddingphotographer.com. You could send people to it, yeah, and then it redirects.
That's a really good point.
But let's talk about the technique that you could use if you wanted to like actually build something out.
Cool. Let's hear it.
Well, let's we have on the screen for people who might see this bonus footage.
Yeah.
We have two sites that Dylan and I have built. Dylan's is icelandwedding.co, and then mine is asgardweddingphotographer.com.
Yeah.
And they are basically just built to be a landing page that's trying to rank for those exact match keywords.
Exactly. And they're pretty much a directory, and the entire technique is based around the fact that directories are rarely coming from a neutral standpoint, where they're just featuring the actual best photographers for that area. And so when Google can see that you're actually trying to get people the best information about that query, and you're displaying it properly on the page, and it includes all the information users are looking for, it's probably going to have a great probability of ranking. And so our whole theory with this technique is building out these directories using exact match domains, and then your content is just going to be so much more relevant than the competition.
Yeah, and even on these, like, we kind of took a shortcut and mm-hmm. basically, like, well, at least on the Iceland one, I think like those descriptions are, didn't you like take those from their sites or something?
Yeah, and I should have taken more time to rewrite them, and I probably need to go back and do that.
Yeah, because Google loves unique user-generated content, or, you know, like unique reviewer content that is going to add some new context or details to these businesses. Anyway, so if you want to create a directory, like, you could buy these exact match domains, set up 3, 5, 10 of the best photographers in that city, you know, pick some of your friends who you want to send referrals to, put yourself at the top of the list.
Yeah.
And that's a strategy that can theoretically work. I mean, my Asgard Wedding Photographer site
number one
is getting ridiculous amounts of traffic. I mean, more than most photographers that we work with. It's getting something like 2,000 or 3,000 clicks per month from search engines right now.
Yep.
So I mean, like, you could build that out to be a, and that's from some of the content on it, but even the homepage still gets some, like, I saw someone searching for like Viking wedding photographers, like weird stuff like that. It still ranks.
Yeah, I need to put more effort into the Iceland directory. That was kind of a midnight thought, and I think I put it together in like 20 minutes. So
yeah, it looks like it's an Elementor, like, oh, yeah, built-in,
yeah, templates, the lowest of the low. It's the worst.
Nice.
So yeah, I'll fix that up and maybe get some better content written on the homepage and see what I can do with it. Maybe a link building campaign. We'll see.
Yeah, but the idea here is the exact match domain needs to have unique content if you ever expect it to rank. If you're just going to redirect it, it's not going to have any value unless it had links.
That's rare.
Only good links. So really the reasons to buy them would be you're going to build a site that has unique content, you're going to name your business that exact same thing, or you're just trying to keep it out of the hands of your competitors.
Yep.
And for $50, I mean, like, if you can get them for that low,
yeah,
it's, and you still have to re-register, so it's like $12 a year. you don't want to have tons of them, but I mean, I've bought them. I think I had like four or five of them back when I was doing wedding photography in Colombia. I had like a bunch of ones related to Colombia wedding photography, Colombia family photography, not exactly those, but like similar things like that.
Yeah. I've bought them in the past as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Third question.
Let's dive into sight links.
All right. So we have so many people who ask about sight links, but usually they don't know that they're called sight links.
Totally.
So why don't you tell us, Dylan, what are sight links?
Yeah. So if you perform a query on Google, and I'm going to do one in the on the screen here. So I'm just doing my name, Dylan M. Howell. My site's going to show up as the first position, and it's going to have my site title highlighted in blue, and then have my meta description, and then below that, it has six different subtitles, and they're the names of popular pages on my site. So it says blog, wedding, about, learn SEO, portraits, and contact. Those are site links. And it's grabbing those typically from the menu of my site. There's no tool to tell Google which pages to show there, and there's no tool anymore to tell Google to remove certain pages. It's all in how you set up your site and giving Google the best information to tell them what the most relevant pages are.
So let's kind of back up for a second here. And whenever Dylan just said he did a search for Dylan M. Howell and he got these site links, one thing that's important to note here is that most of the time you'll only see site links on a query where Google is almost 100% sure that you're looking for one specific website. So whenever you type in Dylan M. Howell, they're almost 100% sure that you're looking for Dylan M. Howell. .com. Whereas like you're not going to get site links that are like that, the regular drop down site links for if I search for Portland wedding photographers, you just won't see those kinds of site links. However, there's another kind of site link. I call them inline site links. I don't know if there's a technical name for them, but you do see those on regular queries. So like if you just do a search for why don't you try like Portland wedding photographers.
Let me do that. I don't know if any of mine show up for that term. Let's look.
I bet you someone's has them almost always. You'll see.
Might have them. Cool. So in this one, I did Portland wedding photographers, and the site above me doesn't have any site links, and then mine shows wedding, blog, elopement packages, and portrait. And so I like these because it gives you slightly more space in the search engine results, and people are probably a little bit more likely to click. And I could actually look up the click-through rate for that term to those pages and see if people are actually clicking on those.
Yeah, it's interesting because if someone is searching specifically for elopements and they typed in Portland wedding photographer, they'd be like, oh, he does do elopements, and they might click that.
Yeah.
Often you'll also see contact and pricing get pulled into those inline site links. So if that's what someone's looking for, then it's likely that they'll just click it directly right there. So Dylan's going to do another search here, and it's for SEO for photographers.
Yeah. And this is another slightly different style. There's still an inline site link like Corey was talking about, but these are going to link to individual headings that appear on that page rather than subpages of the site. So introduction is clicking through to the same link with the hash identifier introduction, and those are generated from my table of contents plugin.
Yep, exactly. So there are different ways to get site links for different types of content. I feel like most of the time people are asking us about the branded site links, and the main reason the question typically comes up is because people have site links that are undesirable. They have things that they shouldn't actually have as site links. Now, the first thing I would say about that is probably 80% of the time, it's because they have things indexed that shouldn't be. So they should probably, if you're taking our course, you should look at the indexation lessons. If you're taking our SEO challenge or you have our ebook, you should look at the indexation lessons there, because you probably want to no index your tag archives, your categories. Those are very common for Google to pull as site links. And that's one of the main things I see people asking, or image attachments, even they'll be showing up as site links. Like all of those things can be like easily eliminated just by managing your indexation better.
For sure. Yeah. And sometimes you're going to have to use the removal tool to remove the page from the index entirely. That will take it out of the site links. You can try to index it again later if you think it's a worthwhile page to have. You just didn't want it in the site links. But yeah, the biggest thing is to send the strongest possible signals as possible by highlighting your best pages in your menus, having proper titles on all of your pages, and meta descriptions that make sense.
Yeah, and this is one of the questions where we do already have a YouTube video, and we're planning on making YouTube videos about the other two questions that we've answered today. We'll make sure to link to all of those in the show notes, but in the YouTube video for site links, I do go a little bit more into like some tips, because Google does seem to, it's a little bit random. Like, it's not just going to pull from your menu. It could pull from other links on a page. It can pull from lots of really weird things.
Yeah.
And the text that it uses is sometimes interesting. It could be the anchor for the menu. It could be the page title. It could be a lot of different things.
Perfect. Well, we hope that those three questions have been answered and we no longer have to answer them ever again.
Yeah, right. But we should like have like a keyboard shortcut on our phones or something so we can paste them in a little bit faster.
Exactly. Well, I'm excited to have the videos to just be able to hit people with those.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that's all for today.
Perfect.
All right. See you next episode.